It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. In short, the period was very much like the present period.
You're listening to Community Radio, KBOO Portland.
Hello. 1, 2, 3.
I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to a song being sung by my guest today. It's called Disappearing, and it's from the new musical, The Pursuit of Happiness, written by the talented Ernie LaJoy.
We were 16 years old in a park, in a clearing of trees. We were young and alive and afraid, hoping nobody sees. Both of us timid, and both of us tense. Suddenly everything all making sense. You and I face to face, with my back to the fence, and the fit of your coat, and the shape of your chin, and the lump in my throat, and the tone of your skin, and your hand on my back, and the slowing of time, and my limbs going slack, and this feeling like I'm disappearing, disappearing, for that one perfect moment of life when the doubt melts away. Disappearing in the clearing. For the first and last time in my life, I thought, I'll be okay.
This impassioned song is performed beautifully by actor and singer Alec Lugo. Alec graduated from Pacific University in theater and film just 4 years ago, but already he's made an impact on Portland theater. He was in the Drammy Award-winning production of Cabaret, performing the role of Clifford Bradshaw at Fuse Theater Ensemble. He's a marketing staff member at Bag and Baggage Productions and is an ensemble member of Fuse Theater and the Outright Theater Festival, where he also does marketing work. That's also how I got to meet him, actually, was through Cabaret. It's so good to actually talk to you again, Alec Lugo. I want to welcome you to stage and studio, but I believe this is the first time you've been on the show.
Yes. Yeah, this is the first time I've been on stage and studio. Thank you so much for having me, and it's just good to see you again after, so much time of not seeing a whole lot of people, to be frank.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you again, and I really enjoyed listening to you and watching you in the video that Fuse Theater Ensemble did of the musical Pursuit of Happiness by Ernie LaJoy. You just sung it so beautifully. What was it like to film and to sing Ernie's lovely song? I mean, especially after all the shutdowns, because that came out when, like, last May, I believe.
Yeah, we actually produced that as a part of the Outright Theater Festival 2020. And we had planned to produce the full show in this season. Plans, I was already designing posters and artwork, and we were already working on press releases, and we had just finalized the cast. And then the shutdowns happened. And like many people, we had to pivot and shift. We were still dedicated to wanting to produce the show in some capacity, in some way. And the festival as a whole, actually. And so thanks to people who are very creative and a whole bunch of them, mostly Rusty Tennant, who they are just an incredibly creative entity and curated a new season that was not only to address the lockdown issue, but also to address the rise in the Black Lives Matter protests, and wanting to provide a more equitable space in how Confuse provide more opportunities for Black and Brown artists to perform in this festival. And we even went so far as to sort of incorporate some of the programming that we had originally intended to produce for Outright 2020, and then adding in new things as we saw necessary. We all felt safe enough to be able to have maybe two or three people spaced out in a room at a time in order to record that. You may have noticed, Dime, in the video, there is our accompanist, Mac Kostelic, who is behind me, who is masked, and who is providing live accompaniment for that song. And then we also had Rusty in the room. We had Ernie joining us. So we actually managed to keep it below five people. And we have all been self-quarantining. Many of us got COVID tests, even in the sort of early days when they weren't as readily provided. So we wanted to make sure we were being as safe as possible. But the song that is featured in the video that I'm in is called Disappearing. And it was there from the beginning. And it's a very powerful piece featuring one of the characters from the show. And Clark is revealed to be a closeted homosexual man who is reliving his trauma of being assaulted. And as a result of that assault, Clark was sent to a gay conversion therapy program.
So they send you away where you pray to be healed, and the lies become truth, and the truth is concealed, and that part of yourself by the fence in the field, well, he never stood up and he never moved on. He just fades out of view until one day he's gone, till this pillar of lies that you're standing upon all comes crashing down all around, and you find yourself back in the park by the fence on the ground.
The music is so lovely, but also the subject matter is so pertinent. It's almost like a juxtaposition of this beautiful, poignant song and then really talking about something so graphically violent. And I hope that it gets produced.
Yeah, we know that it will be at some point. You know, whenever that happens to be, we'll be there. We'll be there to produce it.
As we're talking, my Thanksgiving was kind of a quiet one. I imagine it was for most everybody. Hopefully it was a safe one and healthy one. It's kind of a milestone, you know, going through these holidays now. It's like it will be remembered decades from now.
Yeah. I mean, I think about, I'm 26, and I think this is probably the most significant event that I can personally claim as impactful on my life in the way that it is. I know for many people, the events of like the 9/11 terrorist attacks stick out as a very universal experience for a lot of people. I was very young at the time. And since then, I've become more and more attentive and aware of the world as it happens. And so there are plenty of things happening in the world that bring communities together and feel very poignant on that level. But certainly, I think starting in 2016 with the presidential election and then kind of following through to that, and then this is kind of the buildup of everything that makes it all so poignant and memorable in my mind. I can tell you, I can just as much easily tell you what I've done for this entire quarantine as much as I could tell you I have no idea what I've done, because days blend into each other, but they are pinpointed by milestones of things like, how did we produce this theater, and how did I manage to get through this, and what new things did I learn about myself, or did I learn about my community? And I've always thought of it in a sense of like, I don't think anybody needs to write the novel they've been waiting to write during this time. I don't think that that's fair to say. I saw this really hilarious, but hilarious in quotation marks, image of a person who is out on a boat in the middle of a turbulent sea, and it's raining and there's thunder, and it's incredibly disheartening and dismaying, and the caption underneath is, ah yes, time to finish that novel. And it's just very much how it feels sort of right now. Like, we're at a very turbulent time. Emotions are very high and people are restless, and we're stuck in this weird transition period between wanting to return to a way of life that feels available to us and then also transitioning into having new conversations and maybe realizing things about ourselves and our culture that we frankly have been a little sleepy to, myself included. I have to face those things every day. It's so hard to sort of want to rejoin my industry and my community and not acknowledge the fact that I've changed or that I haven't thought about things. And you can see that in individuals, in our art, in our politics and our government. I think that everyone has been affected by this.
In case you just joined us, I'm DeMay Roberts, stage and studio. My guest is actor and singer Alec Lugo. And if you missed any of this show, I'll have the podcast at stageandstudio.org or kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And I agree that this is a time of introspection and really working on ourselves more than anything else, because that's all we can really. And I've noticed that for myself, there's been a decrease of stress, which I've really liked. You know, the stress is going out, you know, and being worried about what might you bring back with you. That's certainly a stressor. But other than that, it's been really actually good in many ways to do that kind of self-work and self-introspection and just kind of calm things down as much as you can in your home life. I also have this thought that, you know, it's going to be maybe until next spring, hopefully, or so, when you start entering the world again, you know, at large. And I'm going, everybody's going to look at each other going, God, you've gotten older. Because we haven't seen each other in so long.
I mean, 2 years is it's so weird. 2 years feels like both a lot of time and also not like anything. I mean, we're already, we're in Portland. We've been in shutdown for 9 months. And gosh, if that isn't just 3/4 of a year, and it feels as if though it was just summer the other day. Part of that introspection has also been like, this is an interesting time to just like see exactly how much 9 months takes you, you know, like what things do you think about? What kind of time does it take to incubate a thought? What kind of time does it take to incubate a motivation or a plan of action to do something that you want to do, whether or not that's in an organization or on a sort of administrative level or even just personally? I really liked what you said about like, I have felt certainly a decrease in a certain kind of stress that was associated with my life when I was hustling to auditions and rehearsals and callbacks and trying to learn new music and trying to get in, you know, my time to practice voice lessons and exercise and eat, you know, in a way that I wanted to serve my needs, and combine all that with an 8-hour workday, you know, at my job. And I was not taking care of myself. I was very much self-sacrificing myself for the benefit of my career, of other people, of things that aren't even tangible, of like thinking I need to do this, otherwise I'm unproductive and therefore I am, you know, to not put it so harshly, but worthless. You know, what worth do I have if I'm not working constantly, you know, and doing things? And I think that that is, if depending on how far you want to get into this conversation of like, that is very indicative of us living in a capitalistic culture that places a value statement on how much the worker produces and how much we expend ourselves and if we volunteer our time. I think we do that in the theater community though too. I mean, maybe more so than other people. Like, there's sometimes a badge of pride that gets worn about like, oh yes, I do all this rehearsal and then I have an audition that I have to go to that's like 40 miles away. And then in the evenings, I still have to send a bunch of, you know, notifications and emails to other, you know, prospective, you know, jobs. And it's just exhausting. And we used to wear it as a badge of honor because we had nothing else, or we, you know, felt as if though in the theater industry that's normalized, or even in arts industries that's normalized. And it's very distressing. And the more I calm down, the more I sort of learn to let go of not feeling like I wasn't doing anything, because in all reality, if you are resting, that is something, like closing your eyes and breathing, or you're sitting in a place of existential dread. Do what you need to do for yourself. And cultivating those habits and that way of thinking right now is, I think, what is sort of the cornerstone of my focus. Is I want to be able to return to whatever industry we have as ready as I can to serve it the best way that I can. You know, whether or not that means I get to continue being an actor and a singer and a dancer and be in musicals and shows, that would be wonderful. I would love that. And I don't think I'll ever stop doing that. But I've often described myself as like a chameleon. I'll walk into an audition room, and in a room full of white people, I stand out as sort of the one person who might have a smidgen of anything else. But in a room full of people of color, I look like the white passing person. And I can't help it. I can't do anything about it. There's nothing. I could walk into that room and speak full-blown Spanish and start, you know, spouting off, you know, whatever. And sometimes it still wouldn't do a thing. And sometimes people would still be all like, oh, well, you know, your Spanish sounds very much like white, like you learned it and it's not cultural. And I'm just like, who are you to say that? You know, but at the same time, like, do I need to be a person who, you know, steps aside and maybe speaks on different topics or assumes different roles or has conversations surrounding equity or diversity or needs to advocate for other people who can't advocate for themselves? I want to be as well rested in myself so that I know that I can do whatever job that is as best as I can.
I agree with that. And I think you're right that busyness is normalized. So is stress. You know, that's, oh, everybody sort of laughs that off in theater. And also being sick is normalized and accepted. Yes. And I hope that changes too, because I don't think there's a need to be sick and have everybody in your cast and crew sick.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't think there's a need for that, but that's normalized, you know, like, ah, ha, 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 you know.
I was in a production of Mary Poppins with Northwest Children's Theater, which was a wonderful show. And I very much enjoyed working with them and on that show. It's probably one of my favorite shows I've ever done. I got to play the role of Bert, the chimney sweep. And that was in the winter season. And the winter season brings with it the flu and other kinds of cold. And I very much like a person who was like, I'm far too busy, I can't do it, did not get my flu shot, and I caught the flu. The story goes, we spent tech week all the way up to getting the show up on its feet. And with that production, we also had several school shows come in the morning. This was when I was working a part-time job. So I would get up and arrive at the theater at like 9 a.m. and we'd do the show at 10 or 10:30. And then I'd be done, and then I'd have to go to my job in the afternoon and work until like 5, and then get home and rest as much as I could. And that show was physically exhausting. I was climbing all over the place. I was tap dancing. I was running. I was doing quick changes. It was insane. And by the time we got up to opening night and then opening weekend, by the time we did our last show on Sunday, we had celebrated our opening weekend, and we had a little party and a get together. And I was kind of feeling a little exhausted, and I was like, oh, I'll just go rest, it'll be fine. Went home, had some dinner, woke up the next day, and I was out of commission. We had a 3-day interlude in between that weekend and the next weekend of shows. Fortunately, we didn't have any school shows in the morning, but I was done. My voice was out. I was aching and shaking and shivering, and I was like, I have to perform in 3 days. So I just chugged all sorts of supplements and tried to make myself feel better, believing and getting into that sort of idea of believing that it's okay to be sick, believing that it was like somehow my fault, of like, I should have been taken care of myself better. There's something I could have done. The anxiety of being like, I'm going to show up on Thursday and not have the best performance, and be very cautious of not wanting to get my cast members sick, even though the show must go on, right? And I think right now, we're experiencing a time where sickness is a topic that cannot be ignored. And I think we're living in a very new world where sickness carries with it an entirely new idea of like, okay, everyone, we really need to take this seriously.
Well, and you're young, and so the difference is too is that when you are older, you know, something as simple as the flu can be deadly, just as deadly. Well, not as deadly, but pretty deadly.
It can be a danger.
It can be a danger. So I want to actually just ask you. You grew up, I don't know, in Hawaii, in the Big Island. And your dad works with Aloha Theater.
So he does. He's a volunteer there. He helps build sets. He works there very often as an actor.
How influential was, you know, that kind of upbringing to you becoming an actor? You know, because not a lot of people have that.
My dad takes after me. And my dad did Reader's Theater when he was in college. But when we were growing up, I didn't really have a whole lot of artistic influence until I was maybe about 11. I knew that I definitely enjoyed watching Disney musicals, and I was very attuned to the theatrics. But when we moved to Hawaii, we went to go see a production of Romeo and Juliet, and then we saw a production of Little Shop of Horrors. And I tugged my dad as an 11-year-old on his shirt sleeve, and I said, I want to do that. And so I went, and so he was like, all right. And so he took me to an audition, and I auditioned for A Christmas Carol, and I got in, and the rest is history. And then I kept doing Aloha Theater for years, and until I graduated high school. And then once I graduated high school and I left the island, there was sort of a big hole in the theater that needed to be filled. There was a season there where I was in every show that season as an after-school curricular. It was a community theater. It was not associated with any school. My school didn't have quote unquote sophisticated art programs, mostly just clubs and things like that. But the theater was the one place where I found that. So when I left, there was a hole there that wasn't being filled by our family, and my dad missed it. He missed driving me to the theater every day. He missed the people there. And so he kind of started off with small things. He volunteered to be an usher. He'd volunteer to do carpentry. He works in construction and carpentry. And he then auditioned for things, and he got into things. And he met his new wife through that, who is actually the managing director of that theater. And the funny part I love to say is that I knew her before he did. So really, if he wants to, you know, if he ever wants to thank me for his new lovely marriage, I always say, like, you can make your checks out to me. And he now is a regular there. And obviously his wife is the managing director, so he's always keeping up with the work that's going on there. He's even been in some digital productions as we've been in this new COVID time. He was in a virtual production of the Laramie Project where he did a very important role, and it was very emotional for me to watch my father doing that show, because it's a very sordid history with my family and the accepting of people who are homosexuals and of different sexualities. And I think this kind of comes full circle in our story of, like, you know, I don't know what my life might have been like if I hadn't joined theater and my father had seen and been around people who were so divergent from the norm in our, primarily, you know, my father was raised Catholic, and, you know, we were in some ways influenced by that, but it all changed, I think, when I started doing theater. And so doing a song like Disappearing that describes an experience where trauma is so prevalent in a lot of our lives. And I think doing pieces like that reveal more and more of yourself to maybe the people who need a little bit of that handholding, people like maybe my father, which then probably influenced him to do a show like Laramie Project. And you just change the culture of your family and your industry and your theater and your world, you know?
I really appreciate you telling me that story. And I know that your family's been hard hit by COVID too, with your abuelita passing too. It really makes me feel grateful that that hasn't happened to my family. But also to hear you talk about your father just the way you did it's very emotional. And I really appreciate you sharing that today.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for letting me tell it.
So we're going to go out with more of the song that you were singing at the beginning of the show, Ernie LaJoy's Disappearing from the Pursuit of Happiness. I really appreciate, you know, this conversation, and you have really come a long way, I think, too, just personally, too. You know, you look great. You've been working out. You've been paying attention to yourself. I hope that you can maintain that once you get back into that crazy theater world. I don't think it needs to be so crazy. So maybe this is one good thing we can all work on is, you know, making it more sane.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I certainly hope so. I know for me, the priority is going to be my health and my life, because it's my life and my sanity, my mental state on the line. And I think that as long as I keep that as a priority, no matter what comes up, I and hopefully we will be able to face it, you know?
I have so much faith in your generation, Alec. So, you know, you do that because I think you can do it. Alec Lugo, thank you for joining me today on Stage and Studio. What a pleasure to have this conversation with you and to actually, you know, sit down, even though we're virtual, you know, with each other and have these few moments. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dimay, for inviting me. It's so lovely to see you again.
It's great to see you. So I'm going out with Ernie LeJoy's The Pursuit of Happiness, sung by Alec Lugo. That's it for Stage and Studio. You can hear this show again at stageandstudio.org or kboo.fm/stageandstudio. And you can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, like us on facebook.com/stage, the letter N studio. Till next time, I'm Dimay Roberts.
So they send you away where you pray to be healed. And the lies become truth, and the truth is concealed. And that part of yourself by the fence in the field, well, he never stood up, and he never moved on. He just fades out of view until one day he's gone. Till this pillar of lies that you're standing upon all comes crashing down all around. And you find yourself back in the park by the fence on the ground. At the scene of the crime, of a brutal attack, where you're frozen in time with the boot on your back, and the blood on your coat, and the tear in your skin, and the hand on your throat, but it's time to begin. Reappearing, reappearing, and start clearing away all those decades of doubt and unease. Reappearing in the clearing, when I open my eyes and I see that it's time to stand up and break free. But a part of me might always be ...16 years old in a park, in a clearing of trees.
The following program is a special encore rebroadcast for these unique pandemic times, sourced from decades-old cassette tapes. Decades-old cassette tapes. Decades-old cassette tapes. Dates, times, and events
mentioned in said cassettes have already occurred and are no longer relevant,
and the sound quality at times can be horrible. Thank you for listening and for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Andy, moan, my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Sarah Turner. She's the co-founder of the Mobile Projection Unit. She's here talking about ways of projecting stills and videos in public spaces, how projection mapping works, and the value of guerrilla art and performance. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
This is great because you're a video artist and we're talking by Zoom, and it feels kind of sad, really, doesn't it?
Oh, I like it. I was messing with my Snapchat filters earlier. Maybe I'll put it on too.
Okay, for you, this is your lingua franca, but for me, doing radio, I'd much rather be in a room with you. But the great thing about Mobile Projection Unit is you have taken a technology of, you know, projecting big images onto buildings and bridges and things outside, and made it, you know, it's really come into its own in the pandemic, because people can still see art and, you know, not cough all over each other and give each other coronavirus. So that's brilliant. You've kind of been a good 2020 for you.
We cracked the code. Yeah, it's been really fortunate that it just so happened that this type of artwork worked in this situation. Yeah, especially at the beginning of the pandemic in early March, I work in events. And so immediately all of my work for 6 months was canceled.
Oh, wow.
And yeah.
Oh, what do you do in events?
I do event planning, and a lot of my artwork as a working artist